Good day, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Rise from the Ashes podcast. I'm your host, Baz Porter, and today I'm privileged to have the guest I have today. He's worked with some phenomenal companies and people in the world. He is a legend in this industry of coaching, leadership, neurostrategy, and I want to introduce him. And I'm going to have a drum roll with this. So we're going to have a little drum roll. His name is Stephen Feinberg, and he lives on the west coast of America. I know he said Australia there for some strange reason. America. Stephen, please introduce yourself to the world and tell people who you are.
Hi, this is Stephen Feinberg. To all of you supporters out there and listeners, and the only legend that I know of is that it may be a legend in my own mind. Every now and then, my wife makes sure that I know that the truth of the matter. We've been married for 43 years. I'm a lucky guy. I got lucky. And so grew up sleeping on a fire escape in New York City. And I'm a neurostrategist. So my story is, how did I get from the fire escape to become a neurostrategist? And perhaps we'll talk about that.
But Stephen, you're also humble.
My wife says, I mentioned my wife earlier, but my wife said that when you tell people you grew up sleeping on a fire escape, you must tell them that your parents and your grandparents brought you back inside when it was snowing, cold, or rainy. You must tell them. And they absolutely did. I was totally loved.
That was my next question. Did they really? Or are you just saying that to get out of catch?
out there, there was not enough space.
Aspect of sleeping on a fire escape in New York. I know New York's cold. How did that actually start occurring? Was it you just were punished out there, or were you just, did you just opt in sleeping?
We moved back in at one point. So how I got to become a neurostrategist has a lot to do with my dad. We had to move back. At one point, we had to move back in to my grandparents' house. Because this was like early 1950s, right? And we moved back into Lower East Side on Delancey Street, New York. We call it the bowels of New York. The apartment that we were in was a three-bedroom apartment. And so we had my grandparents and my parents and my brother and I. And they had my aunt who was there also. So we were all together in this three-room apartment, and there wasn't enough beds. But when I think about that apartment building, what's interesting is a block up the street or so now is the Jewish Tenement Museum. Mm-hmm. And that tenement museum is an exact replica of the apartment building that I grew up in. So if you go into it, it's the apartments are just like I grew up with. And so basically, I grew up in a museum. So there's the legend.
It's just now you've got some incredible, really good conversations beforehand. You've got plenty of stories of overcoming adversity and resilience in your life. In your career, what was the main life lesson in your career that was that stands out above anything else?
So I started saying about how my dad was pivotal in my life, a hero. So he's fathers are to many kids, children. Yes. My dad didn't want me to go into the family business. Now, most people's businesses are retail or construction or the services or healthcare or various legal positions, accountants, all kinds. My dad wasn't any of those. My dad was a big time bookie in New York City, started in the 1940s or so. And not the type that reads books. And he wasn't in the mob, right? He was a good man, but we could say that he was mob adjacent.
But yeah.
For people who don't know what a bookie basically sets odds and takes bets. And in one game, when I was fairly young, in one game he lost 10 large. That's $10,000 in bookie parlance, about $95,000 in our current number. In one game, he lost $95,000. And then he won it all back. This was sports gambling. So he won it all back by the end of the day and won more money. Every single day, there was instability. So it was I grew up a life of uncertainty. But it was because of how I grew up and because of the way my father looked at the world and I started seeing things, it was a masterclass in handling and mishandling uncertainty. And so today, with all this uncertainty, this is fairly familiar to me. And my wife, the neurostrategy is, people ask me, what the heck is neurostrategy? Neurostrategy is focused on brains, games, and foes to be able to create the exceptional, to create greatness.
When you say about brain, games, and then the foes, are you able to touch on the differentiate, the unique components of them? And how did you end up learning about them? Obviously, your dad's a bookie. Every time I hear this, I'm like, have you ever seen the film Lucky Number 7?
Lucky Number 7?
Lucky Number 7. It's got Bruce Willis in it. And it's about a bookie. Uh-huh. And how he got ripped off, and his son comes to avenge him years later. And when you say this, like, that's what comes to my mind, is this book here and the films, which is phenomenal.
Different world. Let me tell you, different world. I remember going to see The Godfather with my dad and another one of my dad's friends that he grew up with. It just so happens that this friend that he grew up with became a cop, and then he became a rogue cop. So a rogue, he was the bag man for the mafia. So he didn't do anything hurt people, like those, but he needed money. So we're watching this movie, and I was about 17 at the time when they came out, 16, 17, 18, something like that. And as we're walking out, nodding, seeing, they're mumbling to each other about different people that they know or knew or think about, or whether or not they think it's real or not. As I walk out, a little old lady, who's probably my age now, she said, there's no such thing as the mafia. And I looked at her, and I looked at this bag man, and I looked at her, and I know my dad's a big time bookie and does that. And I went, how is it that she doesn't know what's right in front of her? How is it that I can't see what's there? And that actually is a lot of what I do, is to show people how to see what they don't see. How to see possibilities that they don't think is possible through the whole. It goes on back to the fire escape. From that fire escape, I looked down on the street and I could see all this action, all these people interacting all the time. It was always looked like a game, right? And I grew up with the idea of games and betting on games and games. And so it's, what's the game? What are they up to, right? What's going on? And actually, the neurostrategy, really, as I said, brain. So it's about the neuro part is about the GPS for the mind, connect the dots. Games, a game is a pattern of interactions. The way I think about it, we look at the metagame, it's a pattern of interactions, a story on a game board with rules, threats, and rewards. And we look at what these are and how to navigate through them. And then the foes, maybe we'll talk about that a bit, but that's how I differentiated and started seeing all these kinds of things.
So I love that. And I've got a question. Do you like chess?
I'm not good at chess.
Okay.
I like Go. Mm-hmm. I'm not good at Go, but I like what's a lot about the chess. What I like about chess is the ideas that they're involved in it is, like a grandmaster is always one step ahead.
Yeah.
And what I work with, teach, show people how to do is how to be one step ahead. So like a grandmaster does, but it's not about on an actual chessboard, but it's a good metaphor. I'm going to get this summer.
Yeah, no, cool. No, I just saw the sun change. Okay. Other than the fact that your backstory is quite incredible to where you were, the transition of your learning from your father, what actually makes you and your company unique? Because there are a lot of coaches listening to this going, I can do that. But in actual fact, they can't, because you have something very unique to you that makes what you do so elevated. And that's I know that's correct because I've had enough conversations with you. But what is that uniqueness that you bring to the table?
So let me just put it in the context of a story. I the CIO of Wells Fargo asked me to come into the company and to give a speech about collaboration. A lot of people give speeches about collaboration, very important. Just before I went on stage, the CIO, his first name is Barry, and I was friendly with him. He's from Brooklyn, so I knew we got along. And he says, what do you want me to say about you? And I said, whatever you want, but I'm a psychologist, a shrink. Don't tell him I'm a shrink because it makes everybody nervous. And we want them to be talking. So I go on. Barry goes on. He makes this great introduction about them, how important it is to collaborate, how it makes a difference. And we weren't trained to do that. We all got grades individually and we weren't working together when we grew up, at least. He said, so I've really brought here Dr. Feinberg. Please welcome me. Oh, by the way, he told me it's a shrink. And so I walk on stage, I start chuckling to myself, thrown under the bus. Right? And I went, thanks, Barry, I appreciate that. And I looked at the audience, it was like several hundred people. I look at the audience and I say, how many of you want to be shrunk? No one. Silence. And it's not. I said, how many of you would prefer to be stretched? And everyone's hands shot up.
Yeah.
So what I said, that's why we're here, to stretch our thinking. And how do you stretch your thinking was to play what I call the metagame, which is the basic, one of the key elements of what I do, is stretching is one of the key elements. And in order to do that, people often come to me and they ask, how, when in the corridors of power, where leaders reside often, and entrepreneurs have their own power world, there's the desire, the intensity to be great, to boost impact and get great results fast, fast track results, is one of the questions that I address oftentimes. They want to be great and they want to grow. I think it takes three elements to do this. And the three things are the three qualities. One is pattern recognition. The ability to see patterns enables you to predict. So that's where and when you can predict something, then you can know when what can be successful and what not. So one is the skill set of pattern recognition, which is that also is the ability to spot the game. So that ability to spot the game is one of the core things that I do, that a lot of people don't see the game board that they're on. They say they are, but I'll tell you some stories where I tell you clearly they don't know, because there's the conscious game, not the obvious game, but we want to know where the adaptive power, which is the second element, which is adaptability. So once you know what the patterns are, you have to be able to adapt them to be in your favor. And if you're going to be a game changer, which is what we focus on a lot to make a big impact, then you have to defy expectations. Like think of Serena Williams. She defied expectations. So the first is pattern recognition and developing that skill to spot the game like Sherlock Holmes. The second is the ability to adapt and to have the adaptive power and adaptive speed, be able to do that, know how to do that, like Serena Williams, and defy expectations. And the third element, that once you can see what's going on and recognize the patterns and can bust the patterns, change it. If you're going to do anything with other people and get other people to do stuff, if you have an entrepreneur or a leader or you work together or whatever role you are, if you're working with other people, you have to be able to influence them. And so you have to be able to set the frame. If you think about Mahatma Gandhi, influenced a whole nation of people, right? Mm-hmm. So the key elements of what I do is be able to spot the game, bust the pattern, and set the frame in the context of these skills of pattern recognition, adaptability, and influence. And there's very specific skills that are going to show people how to do that.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I like about how you use the adaptability and behavioral and pattern recognition. Many people just think they do it because it's how who they are. But if, like you said, if you can identify the patterns, you can then start to change them and change the belief system, the values, and all the rest of it that goes with it. In that framework of what you do.
And then there's the, so what that is what I talk about, what I do is game boarding. So yes. A lot of my clients, they talk about, so what's the game board? I always talk about the game board because it's the hidden game board, the game board of power that we're on. And what I'm trying, what I focus on is giving them, game boarding is the strategic master key to pinpointing the essential elements of the levers of power, the critical levels of power. So game boarding is the being able to spot or be able to identify what the critical levers of power are to unlock the game of patterns. And so I'm talking about the game of patterns and unlocking these game of patterns. And in order to do it, those three things, what enable you, when you do it well, you become a first adapter, not an early adapter, but a first adapter. We can talk more about that.
Yeah. So that was good. That was going to lead me to my next question for this was clarify game board and what that means to you in bringing, encompassing how you show up for your clients. And even in your own, see, everything is at some level a game. Life is a game if you choose to view it like that.
I do.
And I love the analogy of
a higher level game, right?
Yeah.
It's a story, right? So we hear about people talking about stories. A game is a pattern of interactions, right? It's a story with players on a game board with rules, threats, and rewards. And the game board that leaders play on is the game board of power. And so when you know the mechanics of power, you can be more power, more effective and create things. The purpose is not to dominate others. The purpose is to have impact. It's a really important distinction.
Yeah, and that's what I love about how you, the distinction between power and the other side of it. With a game boy, the game board comes in. You can't play at them levels if you're not on the game board. It's that simple. When we look in your own experience and the concept of resilience within this, when you explore resilience, can you share what that actually is for you? Because people have variations of this explanation. It's quite interesting.
Strategic agility is the adaptive power to be able to reimagine the patterns and the rules, the parameters of the patterns to work in your favor. And the person with the most adaptive power is the person who's in charge of the outcome, right? That if you can make prediction, the most powerful person in the room is actually a person who knows what's going to happen next, right? Because they're predicting. So they're masters of patterns. They can be made, and it's not about psychological traits, or it's not about being outgoing or charismatic. You can have quiet people who are reading the game board, who see the field of play. We hear people I talk about who say, I needed to read the room. That's a game board. I needed to understand my environment, what's going on, the culture. That's the game board you work on. The being able to, what's the context? When your context drives understanding. So if you have a guy who's bald standing facing the other way, and depending upon the context, that bald guy, it could be a tough guy, a gangster. It could be a guy who's had been cancer treatments. You won't know unless you know the context, right? And so that's the game board. When people get in trouble or have difficulties or stress or do things that work out, I like to say to them, it's not your fault. It's the game board. So to be able to see, to step back and see what the game board is. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't an inner game and an inner game board that they need to grow and change and adapt.
One of the things that I like about observing scenarios, the things I teach some of my clients when they're going on stage, most people think the speech starts or the keynote starts when you go on stage. It isn't. It starts well before that. Even before the introduction of you, when the host is reading out the bio and all the rest of it, because a good speaker will sit back and do an analysis on a room while they're speaking and they're being introduced. The reason for that is because they're trying to assess who their client is or who they're speaking to. Mm-hmm. Most people, if they're not seasoned enough, go in there and say, oh, my keynote starts while I'm on stage. It starts well before that, even to the sort of interactions before you go into the room, having these small conversations, if you have time to do that. But it really comes down to that analogy of taking a step back and looking at the game and each component of that to go, that's my client there. That's the person I want to speak to. That's the person that needs to hear this message. And you, what you've constructed in your analogy there is a layer by layer construction of seeing things from a much elevated point of view in behavioral analysis, in why people do what they do for the reasons they do, and they're not even actually aware of going up what it is and the resilience from it. But there's also an element of courage when it comes to anything. In your own words, can you describe what the difference is between courage and the resilience in a component, say a business environment with leaders?
The way I think about it's a great question because I haven't thought of it in advance. But the way I think of most leaders that I work with is that they're under enormous pressure and are in high stakes challenges with great deals of uncertainty. And the pressure is intense and they get frustrated when the outcomes fall short of expectation. Most of these people that I work with are extremely competent people, extremely capable. They are heroic already in what they do. In fact, sometimes that's their default response to use their courage to push forward, to use their willpower. They actually think of heroic willpower as their go-to strategy when they in difficulties and obstacles. And willpower is great and necessary, and courage is great. The root word of courage is heart. So when they can bring their heart to it, it's great. You want to show up. But sometimes, even for the most seasoned, strategic, and resilient of players, sometimes they get stuck, and that their attempted solution of heroic willpower, because they don't see the game board, only makes things worse. It's like quicksand. They're working harder inside of it, and they don't see the real challenge is understanding the game board of power and having that strategic agility to be able to change what they're doing, adapt what they're doing to the game board, or to change the game altogether. Am I even playing the right game? Because if they're just playing willpower, they'll just go forward. Let me give you an example. So I have two executives at a high-tech company. Both of them extremely competent. Both of them have big job, what I call big jobs. They have a lot to do. They have a lot to deliver. And then they're given this task that they need to work together to resolve certain things. And this, when you get people with that at that level and they got to work together, they know enough to play the political chess game. You mentioned Chester. So, and they're playing this chess game. Here's what's interesting. So if you default to a chess game of power, of willpower, what happened was they started bucking heads. Who's got more willpower? Who's more career? I'm not going to get stopped by this guy. Both of them extremely smart. And one of them searches into the future. Its tendency is to look in the future and look at the complexity of things and try to resolve things before he takes action. The other guy, his name is Graham. The first guy's name is Robert. Graham is like Mr. Task Commander. He goes, give me the task, let's go. And he will make it happen. All's in front of me, I'll take it down. He's just, let's go. And he's a great guy, but he always gets it done. So these two unmovable guys have their own way of doing it, and they're fighting for whose method they're going to use and who's going to go first. So both of them want to go first. They want to use their approach. We all do. That's how we succeeded. That's how we believe this is how we approach things to be great. And they had, like I said, they were extremely accomplished leaders. So I was listening to them. And I said to them, you guys have a grammar problem. And they said, Feinberg, what are you talking about? good. Can you just leave? What are you talking? This is not English class. Just go. Right? We're really nice guy. Get out. It wasn't the first time people tried to throw me out, but I came back. And somehow they asked me to come back again. And so I said, It's like grammar. You have to have a certain sequence of words have to fit together to make sense. And right now, you're both sending in all these words simultaneously, and you're fighting with each other because you don't have the grammar right. I said, why? And one of them said, okay, so I'll go first. Do it. No, that's his pattern. So I said, so they both have their pattern. And I could see the meta pattern, the meta game of the pattern. And I said to Robert, why? Robert, you look ahead and think about all the complex issues. I want you to do that. And Graham, what I want you to do is to ask Robert all the questions and answer him in advance as best as you can. So he can feel like, okay, we're thinking forward. So it's going to happen. Have some foresight. Go ahead. And then, Robert, when you say, okay, you've asked me all about the complexity that I'm thinking about, you understand it, and we have strategy for it. When you say, okay, we've done that, turn to Graham, and Graham say, we're ready to go. You take it. You lead. And Graham says, deal. And Robert says, deal. And they've been great friends since. So these two guys were bucking heads, mm-hmm. because this was the game board of power. It wasn't about people. A lot of people would have thought they're just playing political chess. This was not a political chess. It was another game board, another metagame that was played about the patterns that they were operating under. So the being able to, if you don't know the skill set to be able to understand the meta and to see these patterns of interaction, how they lead to things, then you may just default to saying they're just power players. They're just chess players. They're political beings. Now, both of them knew how to play the chess game, and that's what they were doing. But there was this other game that couldn't be seen. But once they saw it, they were like, deal. Mm-hmm. And instantly, it wasn't like they needed to go through. A lot of people think change takes a long time. Your brain doesn't want to take a long time. Brains prefer speed. And so you can change the speed that they'll go, boom, let's go fast. So that's why a lot of execs like, because I work really fast solutions for them.
This is what I like about what you do. You allow collaboration from different aspects, but you're still empowering them with their own belief systems. You're not trying to go in and change the psychology as such, but you'll just get them to realize the strength that they individually have can also work together if you can step back and play a game with the two opposing powers. Instead of working against each other, you're working in tandem, and then you're utilizing each skill to its maximum ability, which is what I love.
Yeah. So in that case, it was the speed and the way that was the collaboration of their patterns. So yeah. I had another client who was a director, and his boss said, why don't you go see Steven? So I went and talked to me, and great guy, liked him a lot. His name was Art. And he began talking to me about the difficulties he was encountering. And every fifth sentence, he'd say, so the problem is X, Y, and Z. So the problem, he's an engineer. His task was to solve problems. So he's going to bring up the problem and knock it down. His boss wanted to promote him, become a vice president. The executive suite wanted to fire him. So how does this discrepancy happen? His boss knew who he was and appreciated what he did. But whenever he went to the executive staff meetings, he'd start off with, so the problem is, so they saw Art coming and he'd go, here comes the problem maker. And who's he always pointed to? Us. So I said to him, do you understand the meta message that you're sending to the executive suite? He said, no, I'm just trying to solve problems. He's an engineer. Was his intention was well designed. I'm just trying, really wanted to solve the problems. And he had some really good ideas. This is a smart guy. These are competent people. And so I said, you need your attempted solution is a clue that's causing and maintaining the problem, if you will, the real issue here. And so we gave him some other language. We worked together to find out some other things he could say to frame the language so we could influence them. Remember, I said there's three things. There's pattern recognition, pattern busting, and frame setting. A frame is a lens through which On every game board, there's a frame to see the game. So once we got to see it, he was going, oh my goodness. And he was like a sponge for learning. He went, oh my goodness, I had no idea. It was invisible. His pattern was invisible to him. And it is to most of us. There's blindside. We get blindsided or get derailed or delayed by these, what the board game is. And sometimes it's this game board is internal. So once we switched that, he got his promotion. They were going, okay, let's go. So that's in this case, it's an internal change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. So let's take it back a bit more personal to you. Who is your real life rock star? Not a superstar, but the person that you've modeled, the person you looked up to, other than your father, because I know he was a major inspiration in your life. Is there anyone outside of us you go, wow, I really find them inspiring?
And this may sound surprising to you, or maybe not.
To me, no.
It's you. You are inspiring to me, by the way.
Thank you.
And I haven't thought about this a lot. And I have a lot of different people who I find who have contributed to my insights. Mm-hmm. One of the people that really has, that began changing the way I viewed, changed my frame initially, was a guy named Richard Bandler, one of the founders of and creators of Worcester. And I was around in the early past life time when neuro-linguistic programming was first developed. And Richard, I was in graduate school at the time, 2007 or so. And I'd been out working in the field for a while, and I went back to graduate school to get an advanced degree. And I was sitting in the audience. I had the cheap seats. I was a graduate student. So it's way back. There was several hundred, must be 400 or 500 people in it. And I'm sitting way in the back, and they tapped to have a couch in the back. So I sat up, and I could sit on the back of the couch facing forward. And Richard Bandler was sitting there with his partner, John Grinder. And John Grinder says, he's talking about how there's a structure to subjective experience. And I find that very intriguing. And they begin to teach it. And then at one point, John says, everything is hypnosis. And Richard turns to the group and he says, there's no such thing as hypnosis. And then they both look at the group and they say, now close your eyes. Hopefully people are driving, they don't close their eyes. Keep your eyes open, be safe, close your eyes and go into a deep trance and discover an inner reverie. They go on, and I'm sitting back there. At that moment, my brain goes, both of them are telling the truth. Everything and nothing. Most people don't understand hypnosis. They think it's some Svengali thing. It's not. But they were able to get outcomes that other people don't get, and fast, really fast. I used one of the methods. I had a client who came to me years, maybe 30 years ago. And she had a snake phobia, and she was terrified of snakes and spent $10,000, I think, to try to get rid of the snake phobia, and over 10 years to no avail. She came to me, she heard about my particular way of approaching things. She said, do you think, and she was actually, she lived in Colorado. She was coming to the Bay Area. I was living in the Bay Area at the time. She said, can I see you for an appointment? I said, sure, come in. We talked, and in an hour, I had changed her pattern in her brain. Together, mm-hmm. I switched to what's called the submodalities in the brain, how she coded the experience. And I sent her out. I like to test my work. So I sent her to the reptilian center at the time it was in the Golden Gate Park. So she goes there, and there's all these snakes. And I said, call me and tell me how it is. And she called me and she's laughing. She's hysterically laughing. I don't know what you did. It wasn't what I did. It was how her brain recoded the experience to a different rule set that was now giving her enormous amounts of freedom. Now, the reason I know that it was not short-lived is she called me 5 years later and she said, hey, I'm coming into the Bay Area. Do you think you could see me up for this? I said, sure. But by the way, how did that go? She said, since that day, it's gone. So in one session, in 1 hour, when you know how the brain codes experiences, you can reset the condition to be great. Because that's what it is. It's like for leaders, for anyone, is to be bring your best self and also to see the game board. So it's an inner game and outer game.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love the analogy there, the snake, because there's identifying what's going on, but there's a deeper level and many levels to that of reframing phobia. And the scenario of where it's come from, going back, changing the perception on that to them. But I know the methodology behind it. I'm not going to share it on here. But it's fascinating that you can do that and then have the long-lasting effect years later. Tony Robbins, of him, maybe you've met him, used to be known as the phobia man. And everyone used to go to him to cure the phobias. And then, obviously, he's progress since then into many different things.
Great marketer.
Yeah. He's phenomenal.
Good guy.
Yeah. But what he's done is made it made him the reality it was possible. And he's marketed it in a phenomenal way and built a brand and all the rest of it.
This thing is, it's just not an inner game. It's also an outer game.
Right? Correct.
So I had a guy who came to me. He was a top sales guy in a company, and his CEO comes to him and says, I'm changing your quota. We company needs you to add some quota. This was in the middle of the quarter, after the first month of the quarter. So he was like absolutely furious. The reason why his boss told me to come to him, he says, he goes off to the deep end. He just gets carried away. The CEO came in and changed his quota. And he's telling me the story. He says, I'm going to lose I can't afford to take care of all the kids that I have and the extended family that I'm looking at. I won't be in the president's club this year. So it's all real stuff, right? It's all everyday kind of stuff. I'm in trouble. And he said, and he must think I'm a zero here. So for him to do, I'm just going to fail miserably. And so we had a conversation, in effect, on two levels. One, his inner game, but also the outer game. But how to get the quota. Yeah. So the inner game, I asked him something to the effect of, why do you think he came to you? He said, he's always doing it. He's trying to screw me. I said, quite the opposite. He thinks you're the hero. The company, this is a $4 billion company. They don't play around like that. He needs you to deliver to affect the EPS, the earnings per share. He needs you to get to bring out and add to the bottom line so that they can really, that he's covered. Because otherwise he's got the board and the street and all that, all those problems. I said, so you are actually the hero. Now you have to deliver to be the hero. He said, yeah, so how am I going to do that? Okay. So his brain calmed down, right? We had to first get his brain back online. His brain had shut down.
Yeah.
And most reactive, we all do this when we get reactive. So now his brain's back online. And now we thought, why don't we use the CEO to build to set up meetings with all your customer base, all the other so that you can, because he can just make a phone call, he can talk to the captains of industry and get you in there easier than you can. Mm-hmm. And he went, okay, let's do that. So he went and he told the CEO, you need to make, I said, I'll do this, but you have to help. And the CEO said, sure. He wanted to help. It wasn't like an adversary, but he had this adversarial framework, right? And so what he did was we figured out the bundles of how he'd go in and then he would present. And we worked through what I call the strategic math. So we gamed out the situation for each of the different potential customers to help them move their purchases quarters earlier, bundle the packages for each one. The consequence was that he sold 40,000 more units and made 30,000 more units and made $40 million revenue. So this is not small stuff, big thing, but it's $40 million.
But that's the thing. It's the distinction between playing there and getting in that mind, the frame of mind, the mindset, whatever you want to call that, into it's possible. Leverage other people in your networks and leverage the industry, leverage the experts to create an outcome. It's often
when you can see the patterns, you can predict behavior. When you can the patterns predict what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, but if you can't see the patterns, you're playing at a lower game. So initially, he and you and me play at a lower game. But when we can see different patterns, we can play it big. We can play big. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we play small. In my book, I talk about the game of threats. There's a bunch of patterns like playing small, conflict avoidant, good soldier. A lot of people wanting promotions, right? They want to advance their career, but they go about it on a game board that's actually what I call the good soldier, and they're waiting for people to spot them, and they don't get it, they don't understand it. And because they're playing, partly it's not a fair game board. And so we have to talk about how do you succeed in a game board that's not fair.
No, I love that. Can you give 5 tips for building resilience in a business setting?
For what? Say this again.
Building resilience to get seen in that business setting. So let's scenario this for a second. Someone's come up to you and they said, Stephen, I really don't feel comfortable in having this promotion. Can you give them 5 tips on, like, off the cuff? I know this is complete. I love doing this because it puts people in that place of, the listeners here have to understand this isn't rehearsed. This is literally done because of the reaction of people in these environments.
But you told me this is going to be fun.
Define fun.
That I get it some value to and have impact.
I'm just teasing you. But if you can, 5 tips that could really support somebody listening to this now going, well, I want a promotion, but I don't know how to help.
First thing I do is spot the rules that I'm operating by. See, the rules, now let me just go riff a little bit about this. Rules rule. And so you want to look at both the inner game rules and the outer game rules, because rules determine winners, losers, and how you're going to respond to the challenges you encounter. Mm-hmm. So what are the rules that they're encountering? If they have a fear of rejection or fear of failure, that means it's a rule. Rules determine how we're going to respond to challenges. And so there's rules about how you deal with that condition called failure or the condition called rejection. And so the first thing I do is go, what's the rules? And then look at how are you applying. Second, I'm just going to not numbers. The second is look at do you have a fear of rejection or do you have a fear of failure? And if so, then deconstruct that, what's it about. Usually the fear of failure is driven by thinking it's over, that you don't have another chance at the apple. And in some situations that may be true, but in most situations that we find ourselves, it's not like a sports game, the game is up or down, you can keep going. And in those situations, I always say, we didn't get there yet, right? Which implies you're going to learn something or find some value or mm-hmm. go about things differently. The other thing that I would do is, and if it's a rejection, if they're concerned about in a promotion, is to go, okay, so I made a request and they said no. That's all it means. Don't add more to the meaning than it actually is.
See it for what it is.
See it for what it is. I said no. It's like in salespeople, people said, no, okay, move on to the next one. Doesn't mean they rejected me. I must have not combed my hair right or something. Or like, I was abandoned as a child. No, it means they just rejected the offer. And so people add in stuff. So don't add in stuff into the request and just say what it is. The other thing is I really focus on what's the game board there? Is it a fair game? So is the game board? So I give the story of, I had this one guy come to me, executive, senior vice president, wanted to become an executive vice president, and he couldn't get any further. He kept saying, what's going on? And he was a big company, was a lot there. And we kept looking, and I said, this is an unfair game board. You're just a good, I mentioned earlier, you're acting like a good soldier. I said, good soldier, congratulations. We appreciate it. It's good soldier. It's not like you're doing anything wrong, but you want something different, right? And the criteria that they have for establishing, for getting to the next level is different than what you have. I had what one said, he only gives people promotions if they're already acting like they are in that position. A lot of times we want a promotion, take on roles or jobs that you need to act at that level, that you're acting like that level. So it's basically, you have to understand the politics also, the political environment, the context, the chessboard, and then build alliances. If you're not building alliances, a lot of times people just make it on themselves, but the game board is designed maybe to require someone else says something, in which they go, okay, let's promote them. Yep. And if you ask directly yourself, it's not going to happen. You also have to look at your pedigree. What's your brand in the minds of the people there, right? What have you done? Have you raised your status in the realm? And by status, our brains make decisions based upon, is there a status gain or a status loss? So have you established your brand in the minds of the people who are making the decisions? And then you have to deliver the performance. So these three P's, the politics, your performance has to be at a higher enough level, and your pedigree has to be. Those three things with understanding the game board and being able to look at the rules. That's what I would say.
Love that advice. Before we part ways today, and it's just the end of the episode coming into, other than your book, which everything will be in the descriptions below, the links for your book and your website, is there anywhere else you want to send somebody, to take a survey or a document that you can provide them to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so what I talk about game boarding, the people who master game boarding are first adapters. They're not early adopters, who you usually find early adopters, someone uses technology soon or service soon, earlier, right? And you usually find them outside Apple stores in sleeping bags, right? A first adapter is someone who spots high level, high leverage patterns and makes game-changing, game-winning decisions. I have an assessment instrument, a free assessment instrument that I developed over the years and evaluated all these executives, all these people who are first adapters. And there's 9 questions. It takes about 3 minutes, and then it will spit out a report about how you compare to the best of these first adapters, these world-class people who are able to achieve at a higher level. It's like some of the people I've modeled or worked with are astronauts, right? Yeah. The Apple CEO, former Apple CEO, former the super high ambassadors and super people who have achieved a great deal. Because it's all about how can you be great and have a bigger impact. And if you're not using these patterns, you can get blindsided, you can get derailed, or you can get delayed on the game board of power.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
If you go to my website, stevenfeinberg.com, and spell S-T-E-V-E-N, Feinberg is F as in family, E-I-N as in Nancy, B as boy, E-R-G, stevenfeinberg.com. You can go there and take, like I said, 3 minutes, and we'll shoot you the report.
As I said, these links will be in the comments below in the description. And also, if you've discovered the blog, it'll be there as well. Before I go, is there any parting words you'd like to leave with the audience, Stephen? Because Jeff, I haven't grilled you enough.
Passing words. It's not your fault. It's the game board you're playing on.
I love that. Stephen, thank you very much for your time and your energy here. I really appreciate you and your time and your love and dedication to what you do in your art. Yeah. Thank you for being here.
Feel free to contact me. I'm glad to talk to people about this. And my book, Do What Others Say Can't Be Done, I interviewed world-class leaders, including the foreword is written by an astronaut who flew to the International Space Station twice. And he was also a client. And so Greg wrote the foreword to the book and talks about this, some of the patterns, some of how to see things and question things and be able to prepare yourself in advance.
I love that. As I said, all the links will be in there, including in that book.
One other thing I just realized, I'm sorry, I know you want to close it. Someone asked me the other day, said, what is it that you want in the world? I said, I want to advance civilization one leader at a time. So that's really my intent, is to advance civilization one leader at a time, to give them the foresight to be one step ahead.
Love that. Thank you, Stephen, very much. And just as a side note, I'm going to actually go and take the test of that, just to see what, just for the hell of it. But yeah, well, Stephen, thank you very much. And if you listen to this, please share this message, download it. It helps me to continue to make more content like this. And sharing it is free. Change someone's life. That's all I ask. And inspire the next generation. Thank you for listening. Thank you for taking part. For myself, I'm Baz Porter. And my fabulous guest today, Stephen Feinberg. Research him, look him up, and say hello to him. Thank you very much. Have a great day. Be blessed. Be safe. And always be well.
Take care.